welcome you to another live edition of the Sports Box, brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And by our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and check them out at www.crowdplayapp.com for details. Ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Cage by IQ. I am your host, C-Bake. Joined with me is my co-host, Jim. And then we have the pleasure of having UFC veteran Anthony Perchak on the show today. How's it going, Anthony?
Good. How are you guys? I got a lot of feedback on my hand from a mic. I don't know. It just seems like a lot of popping. Can you guys hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you good.
Okay, awesome. Perfect.
So how's your day going today, Anthony?
It's going good, man. Easy day. Took today off to get a little, self-care in. Got some fascial stretching done, and then have a cheat meal today. So I'm going to watch a little bit of some Bellator fights. I got my friend Jeremy Kennedy fighting and Ryan Bader, and I'm looking forward to watching those dudes smash.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. I was going to ask you, who do you think is going to win tonight? But I can already tell who you think is going to win the main event.
Yeah, Master Bader, bro. The Master Bader.
Yep. He's looking to retain his belt that he lost. So, and he's my pick for the Grand Prix.
Yeah.
But
I think I was watching that highlight of him getting knocked out by Machida the first time. And I just saw so much impatience with a young fighter. You know what I mean? I think he's a lot more mature now, and I think he'll have a different approach coming at Lyoto this time.
Yeah, because what was that? Probably like almost 10 years ago, maybe? It was like he's learned a lot in that time. He's developed quite a bit, and he's won two belts in Bellator in that time, and he's made a name for himself since then. So.
Yeah, I mean, 10 years ago, holy shit, that seems like a blink of an eye, you know what I mean? But I guess it has been that long.
Yeah.
Yep. But let's get started with our questions for you today. The first one I have with you is, how was it like to grow up a Mexican-American and then live in Arizona?
Oh, dude, some of the, some of the traditions that we have and being in Southern Arizona is a good, strong, hotbed for wrestling and MMA. I grew up about 20 miles south of Tucson in a small town called Saurita. And the predominant, work there is the copper mine, pecan farms. And then when my grandfather had his ranch, he had cotton farms from, I think it was like over 150 acres. Plus he had like 500 head of cattle and 300 head of hog. So I grew up on a big ranch down there, playing in, out in the desert and getting cactus in my calves and shins all over my legs, going hunting and shooting birds and stuff with our BB guns, riding quads, dirt bikes, just being, little hellions out there in the desert, me and my cousins and, those are like the most vivid memories that I have of like growing up, in Southern Arizona. And then just always having barbecues, always having those cookouts, a lot of family. I'm Mexican Italian. So like on my Mexican side of my family, I have a huge family, numbers. And then same thing on my Italian side, we got a bunch of different people. So it's just like, anytime we got together, there's 30, 40 people at a barbecue. It was a blast.
Now, what sports did you play as a kid, and what moment did you realize you wanted to take up MMA?
Oh, MMA didn't come till, as of only like 10 years ago, So like when I was a little kid, growing up in that town, I played everything. I played football, baseball, wrestling, doing paintball stuff and you know, dirt sports. But as I got into like middle school, it was just apparent that I was way more better at wrestling and football. And you know, for the lack of size that I have, I absolutely love football. If I had my little brother size, you know, I probably would have gone to college for football instead of wrestling. But, you know, as I got into high school, I still played football and stuff like that. But, you know, that's where I really, really excelled at wrestling. And I really started seeing that wrestling could put me into college and I could get to the next level. And you know, my thing was I wanted to go to the Olympics. And, you know, fast forward a little bit, you know, wrestling got me into college. I ended up wrestling at Pima Community College in Tucson, Arizona. And I had teammates like Efren Escudero, you know, Jamie Varner, Danny Martinez, Drew Fickett, James Terry. There was like a bunch of killers on that Pima Community College team that ended up either going to Strikeforce, UFC, or WEC.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that is. You said you did football. What position were you?
I actually played quarterback, and like I was so little, I couldn't see over my line. But they, you know, they designed the PA office. I could just roll out, get outside the pocket, and you know, we had an option. We had option pass. Like we had a bunch of shit that would just, you know, cater to me being able to roll out and use my speed and size to get behind somebody. And then later, like in my senior year, I started being more of a defensive player, playing cornerback and free safety and stuff like that.
Nice.
Now that's very cool. Now I read that when you're fighting on the regional scene, you're doing it part time. It said you took up bartending as a job. How is the bartending while you're fighting part time?
Oh, dude, that was probably the worst thing I could have done. You know what I mean? Because it was like we would fucking work all night, then we would shut the bar down and we would drink for another, you know, 2 hours after that. You know, so by the time we closed at 2, you know, our side work would be done by 3 o'clock, 3:30. We'd be drinking till, you know, 5, 6, 7 in the morning. I'd go home, sleep all day, you know, go to MMA practice at 5. And somehow I was being successful doing that. You know what I mean? But that's only one job. I was working 3 jobs at the time: Sports Authority, the bar, and roofing. So Monday through Thursday, I would work at Sports Authority, you know, 8 to 4, 8 to 3. I would go home, shower and change. And then from like 4 to 5, I would go to MMA training. And I was only training once or twice, you know, once or twice a day, mainly once because of the schedule that I kept. And then, you know, I was trying to get my road runs in and stuff like that. And then on the weekends, I would work at Sports Authority, you know, sometimes Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But then after I go to Sports Authority, I did an hour and a half of MMA training, and I would go straight to the bar after that. And then, you know what I mean? Like, I would work. I would make sure that on the weekends I would get off early so that I could be at my roofing job the next day with my uncle. And it was just, it was nonstop like that, man. And like somehow during all that, I was still winning fights, you know? And yeah, it was like, when I hear these fucking millennial kids today saying that I don't got time and, oh, I can't do that, coach, you know, that's too much. I'm like, fuck you, dude. Like, I wanted to get to the UFC so bad. I was burning the candle at both ends and in the middle. You know what I mean? Like, I was sacrificing so much time. All the while, I was a single father. You know what I mean? So, like, I had my son going to my mom or my sisters, you know, my grandma's. And I was just seeing him in these little passing moments. And I felt like a shitty dad. You know what I mean? And now that I'm a little older, stuff's a little bit stable, I'm repairing a lot of the time that I lost when he was, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 years old, you know. And it was like, those are some really formative years. And you know, I was there and I was doing my best to work and put money on the table. You know what I mean? It was hard, you know. And I think I was young. I was like 22, 23. So it was a balancing act for sure.
Yeah, it definitely was worth it now, because now you're in the UFC, you've been around, and then I can only imagine how nice it is now that you don't have to work through several jobs.
Yeah, so, like, what I try to tell people now is, like, money's not a necessity, right? Like, I'm not having to do this out of necessity. I'm not having to say yes to dangerous matchups out of necessity because I need a paycheck. Now I can sit back and be like, okay, you know, 10th Planet Tucson is my main income for payroll, you know, and like, if the UFC gives me a matchup which I like, okay, cool, let's run it. But if it's something that, like, hey, you know, we're offering you this fight, and it's like, ah, man, I probably should take it because I need the money. Like, now it's just like, no, like, that doesn't make sense for me.
Yeah.
You know, now that I have a financial stable situation, you know, I own my own gym there in Tucson, Arizona, 10th Planet Tucson and Toro Tech Mixed Martial Arts. Now that that's a way of me providing for my family, you know, this fighting shit is just fun, you know, I'm trying to make my second run in the UFC a fun time where I really gain ground, get into that top 10 and, you know, have a title run.
Does that change your mentality going into it now that it's just fun and there's less implications if you so happen to lose a few fights?
Not really, right? Because I still like this job.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't want to fucking get fired.
Yeah, I hear you.
Also, like, it has a negative implication, right? Because the necessity for money is not there. I'm like, let's just go fuck around and have fun and get in a fight.
Yeah.
You know? When I was fighting out of necessity, I was fighting for bread and milk. And anyone that stood across from me, I was going to pull flesh from bone because I had to. Now it's just fun.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to see which one this person fucking thrives with. You know what I mean? Whether I was more dangerous when I was fighting out of necessity, or am I more dangerous when I'm having fun with it and I can just be, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you.
And try and gauge it and see which one, like you said, which one works better.
Yeah,
but you know,
both of them are. One of them is extreme motivation through poverty, right, and not being able to fucking put food on the table for your kids.
Yeah.
The other one is, you know, I can finally just enjoy this, enjoy the journey, enjoy the process, enjoy camp. And if I have to pull out because I injure myself training, you know, the bills are still paid. So
yeah.
there's this weird trade-off of peace of mind and dire will. You know what I mean? And like, I can already tell you I enjoy the peace of mind a lot better.
That's good. But
how's the motivation when it comes to necessity?
Yeah.
Now,
something I read a couple of years ago that stuck to me, and I really liked it, and I wanted to ask you about it. What was the motivation for you to start the We Are All Fighters t-shirts that you did a few years ago? Like, as you see a picture there, you had the shirt on, yeah. And then...
So I have a ton of people in my life that are, you know, that are from the LGBTQ community. And I make jokes all the time. And like, people think that I'm this, you know, this fucking brash asshole that has no tolerance for people. But at the same time, like, you know, one of my closest cousins to me, you know, her and her partner, like, those are the people that I love the most. And like, why would I not support those people? What just happened is, like, my son was posting a bunch of stuff while I've been up here in Las Vegas. He was posting a bunch of trans stuff to his IG story. And, like, I message him. I go, hey, bud, what's going on? Like, why are you posting so much, you know, trans support in your IG story? And he's like, dude, he goes, I'm tired of seeing these kids get picked on just for existing. He goes, I'm having to fucking defend these kids now because these other bullies think that it's fun just to pick at them. And, you know, I'm like, so tell me what's going on. He goes, well, he goes, Dad, he goes, this thing happened at school. This girl, you know, or she's a girl to me. She identifies as just non-binary. Some guy just knocked the books out of her hand and dumped them all over the place. He's like, so I grabbed the kid and I kind of shook him and I like let him go. And I went down and I picked her books up and I helped, you know, get her stuff back together. And she's like, I thought you were supposed to be mean. And he's like, what do you mean? She's like, well, you're an athlete. And you're like, you're like, he's cocky. He's a 13-year-old Burchak. You know what I mean? And so she is trying to explain to him that he comes off a certain way and she did not expect him to be how he is. And I ended up reading this text and I'm crying because I'm so damn proud of this kid. I told him, I go, you're a sheep wolf. You know what a sheep or a sheepdog? You know what a sheepdog is? He goes, no. And I go, when you call a human a sheepdog, it's a person that looks out for the others. I go, because the sheepdog is fierce and the wolf fears him. I go, there's going to be a bunch of wolves in life that look to hurt those that maybe aren't as strong or can't be as strong. I go, and that's where you step in. And that's where I feel I step in. You know what I mean? Like, I'm here to love everybody, protect everybody that can't protect themselves or maybe doesn't know they have a voice yet, doesn't know they're strong enough on their own. But that's why I support that. And that, like, I packed that shirt. I was going to wear it today. But I think I'm gonna wear it tomorrow to the gym because I've just been looking at it, man. Like, I unfolded it and I literally put it on my desk today. But I love that shirt, dude. I think it's beautiful, and what it stands for is beautiful.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I'm sure you're like very proud of your son for what he did, because I'd be proud of my son if he was like that.
Well, because what it says, right, is like we are all fighters. Like, we're all fighting some fucking battle.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Some of them are fighting it internally. Some of them are fighting it externally. And some of them are fighting it without the ability to fight. And, like, that's where I was, like, so happy for my son to be able to step in and just be like, I mean, he could have hurt that kid for, you know, but, like, he's just, like, grabbing him, like, shaking him, like, the fuck, dude? Like, let it, you know what I mean? Like, why?
Yeah.
Yep.
No, and
but
for him to now make a stance, you know, he's his own little dude. He just turned 13. He's got these thoughts and ideas now, and it's like, you're not wrong. You know, like, yeah, stand up for people. You know, if you see somebody getting hurt and you know that you can, you're skilled at violence, like, it's your duty to protect somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My last question before I pass it off to Jim, when you had that last win in your first run with the UFC, and then you didn't get a call back, did that motivate you when you went to like Rising and Combat America? Did that motivate you any more to get back to the UFC? Did that put like a chip on your shoulder?
Yeah. So this is kind of a misconception. I never got released by the UFC. I walked away on my own free will. I won that fight, and I went to test my free agency. You know, like, even at you guys all know the contracts coming in. They're 10 and 10, 12 and 12, 14, 14, 16, 16. You know what I mean? You only move up to the next tier if you win. So on my last win, you know, I beat the Ultimate Fighter, you know, Brazil finalist or champion. I think he was a finalist. You know what I mean? I knocked out Joe Soto. And the only really loss that I should have had was to Thomas Almeida. You know, like, I just fucked up versus Ian Entwistle. But when I left the UFC, it was because out of necessity, I needed money. I fought in July. They weren't looking to fight me till March of the following year.
Oh, man.
You know, and during that time, like, I didn't own a gym. I was solely relying on the fact that I was in the UFC, you know, and like, I needed to make sure, you know, the bills were paid. So I would take pictures of my red notes coming from like Tucson Walk or Tucson Power, and I would send them to Sean Jelly Bean. I'm like, hey, dude, I need to fight. Like, I'm ready to go. You know, I even said yes to a short notice fight against Rafael Assunção, who was ranked number 3 at the time when Aljamain Sterling fell out in New York. You know, but that didn't materialize. And at that point, I was like, you know what? Like, the whole WME IMG buyout was happening, and there was 4 contracts that got left in limbo. And it was like Larkin, the Monsoon, who ended up going to Bellator, Carla Esparza, who ended up just chilling and hanging out, waiting until she got her new contract, Ryan Bader, who went to Bellator, and me. You know, so like, Carla didn't have kids. She could just hang out and wait for them to, you know, the IMG dust to settle and get a new contract. You know, me, Ryan Bader, and Monsoon, we got shit to do. You know, and so we went off and tested free agency. You know, I got a bigger contract out of Ryzen. And, you know, I thought at that point, like, okay, this is my price now. No matter where I go from here, this is my price. And it still didn't work out like I thought it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I want to move a little bit forward to now and talk about your matchup with Tony Gravely. What do you think of that matchup?
So moving from Johnny Eduardo, who was my initial opponent, to Tony Gravely, the game plan didn't really change, right?
Okay.
It changed in one way and one way only. With Johnny Eduardo, we were looking to be super wrestling offensive, take him down, choke him out. With Tony Gravely, we're looking to be super wrestling defensive, stop the takedown, choke him out. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
Switching the wrestling to offense, defense, I'm still gonna shoot and take him and put him on his back. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't seen anybody put Tony Gravely on his back yet. You know what I mean? How's his jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
But if he does get a takedown, I'm a 10th planet black belt. Have no problem engaging in the jiu-jitsu on the ground, you know? I'm a student of Ray Sefo, and I have no problem, if he can't take me down, keeping it right there on the feet and you know, giving a kickboxing seminar.
So yeah, I'm sorry.
Wherever this goes, my experience, my, you know, the seniority that I have in this sport is going to shine through. He's a tremendous wrestler. I've watched him wrestle. I know he wrestled at Appalachian State. I'm pretty sure he was a Division I All-American, if not national champion at some place. And I've watched how quick his level change and his penetration shots, you know, and he's very, very fast when that happens. But I'm pretty fast too, man, and I got good hands and good kickboxing. And if he's going to try to get in on the shot, he's going to run into knees, elbows, my hips. And he's going to put himself in a bad position where, you know, either he's going to get knocked out or he's going to get choked out. I have almost just as many knockouts as I do submission wins, you know? So I feel very confident in being able to finish this fight, whether it's on the feet or on the ground.
Yeah. I was curious to see if you were going to take it to the ground, given that 5 of his 6 losses are submission losses. And I knew that you were a BJJ black belt, so I was wondering if that was the game plan. But now you're comfortable, man. Up top, down low, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, man, like, whether it goes, like, you know, he's going to try to take me down. He's going to try to bring the fight to me. I don't need to take him down. You know, I just need to beat the shit out of him on his feet. You know, catch him like Geraldo de Freitas did with a really simple 1-2-3 combination that rocked him. He level changed and shot. You know what I mean? Like, he's not evolved much in the last 4 months. I guarantee that. You know, so me, I'm always changing. I'm always looking to mix stuff up and mix up one aspect of my game or the other. I'm not relying heavily on one or the other. I'm relying on the fact that I am a mixed martial artist.
That's good. Was it different going in? Because it's been about a month since your initial fight announcement in March. Like, how's that training camp been, having to go through like 3 potential opponent changes?
Dude, welcome to my life, bro. Like, this is just my career as a fighter of getting names switched out here and there. Like I said, the training aspect of it didn't train too much. It was like all up here, right? It was like, is that fight even going to happen now? You know what I mean? Like, we kind of had a wake-up call with the visa thing, because in a time when COVID is canceling everything, we forget, like, oh, yeah, fucking visa issues.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which, in my opinion, Johnny Eduardo didn't want to fucking fight to begin with. How long has he been doing this? How long did he know he had to get his fucking visa paperwork? You know what I mean? Like, that is, that's just a folly of apathy. Like, that's
like part of your job.
You know what I mean? Like, if you, you know what I mean? Like, that just was the easiest excuse to have. Like, oh, I need my visa done. Like, okay, you've never been to the United States before, fucker. You know you have to have one.
Yeah. And it's part of the job. You know, you got to make sure that if you're, so now, if you're going to. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying. So now I'm worried going into fight week. Like, we still all got to pass COVID tests. You know, like, we only reached level one obstruction. Like, level two obstruction is getting past COVID, you know?
Yep. Is this one of, like, so when this fight with Gravely is over, is this one of the things where, like, you want to get back in as soon as possible, next opponent up? Or do you, are you strictly focused on getting back with the family?
Dude, I miss my fucking family, bro. Like, I've
been here
since February 20th. Fighting, damn near fighting every single weekend since February 20th. You know what I mean? It's like, I want to sit down, bro. I want to go home. I want to have a beer. You know what I mean? I haven't had a beer in 60 fucking days.
Jesus.
You know, and like, if the camp wasn't so mentally exhausting and everything, like, I would say let's turn around and do it again. You know what I mean? And I would go like, now does Johnny Eduardo have his visa? Let me whoop his ass now.
Yeah.
You know? And then I would go Tony Gravely, Johnny Eduardo, Geraldo De Freitas. Like, that'd be perfect lineup in my mind to get me going on a three-fight win streak.
Yeah. Would you eventually want to run it back with Almeida?
Oh, yeah. Now? Fuck yes. I was the last guy to fight Super Almeida. You know what I mean? Like, when he was fucking juiced up, just feeling good before USADA. You know what I mean? Like, I was the last guy to fight him in his superhero version. Now everybody's starching that motherfucker. Like, yes, please.
Yeah, he was that, when he was that big name that if you beat him, that's like the next step. Like, he was like the pre-USADA boss, you know what I mean, in the division.
Yeah, and that, bro, and you know what I mean? Like, that's why I had to say yes. When everybody was saying no to him, I said yes. And you know what? Like, I've reached out to him, and I've messaged him, and I've messaged him, and I've messaged Ian Entwistle, and told them how integral those losses were to my growth as an athlete. You know what I mean? And like, I appreciate both of those men so much in my life and my career for what they did to me. Because if it wasn't for Ian Entwistle beating me by heel hook, I would have never left the jiu-jitsu place that I was at and joined 10th Planet.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And I wouldn't have had my gym, and I wouldn't have got my black belt, and I wouldn't have had this prosperous thing that I have now. So I thank Ian Entwistle for that. With Almeida, if he would have never knocked me out, you know what I mean? I would have kept thinking that my hands were as good as they were when I knocked out Joe Soto. And I would have fell into that pitfall that all grapplers do. As soon as they get a knockout, they start chasing it. You know what I mean? And they think that they're a striker. Almeida reminded me I'm a fucking jiu-jitsu guy. You know what I mean? And I'm a wrestler. And I will forever say that my Muay Thai and my kickboxing is my weak link, because that dude put my lights out. And it reminded me, like, just when you think you're good at something, remember that there's always another motherfucker that's way better.
Yeah, absolutely. My last question is, you mentioned Toro Tech MMA. I just want to know what it's like running your own school, teaching the next generation of fighters. And I saw that you were training your son on your Instagram recently. What's it like training the next generation?
Bro, it's badass. And I have this duty and this responsibility to make sure that they get to the top and they understand that, like, this shit isn't easy. You know what I mean? My son, I don't even know if he really wants to do this. He's really big into football, and he's 50% Hawaiian. So if he loves football as much as I do and has the size, I think I'm going to send his ass to the NFL and buy me a Lamborghini.
There you go. Absolutely.
But, you know, like, it's been amazing since I've been up here. My amateur, Andrew Slater, just signed his first pro contract for 3 fights with Fury FC on UFC Fight Pass. Nice. This new kid that I got, one of my Hawaiians, Kealii Kanakoa, just got hit up by Bare Knuckle Boxing for a contract. My heavyweight, or my 205er, 185er, that's been with me for 10 years now, just got offered to fight, you know, on April 24th. And everybody's like, Coach, we want you back before we do anything without you. Like, we want you back. You know what I mean? It's like,
Yeah. They're
all ready to go. But they just want to wait till I'm back so I can meet them up, get their heads right, and you know, we can take the battlefield together. Like, I was going to send one of my dudes to fight since I've been up here. And he's like, I don't want to do this without you. And I was like, all right, well, grow the fuck up, you know, and, you know, do this thing, because like, we're all gonna have to fight alone someday, you know, and like, that's been the lesson of this camp to me, has been, don't be afraid to be alone, don't fear the solitude. And it's all just been something that I've been fearing about the UFC Apex. I hate how eerily quiet and just how solitary the Apex is. And the lesson that the universe has been teaching me with this camp, me being here and being by myself and being alone, is I step into that cage alone. That's it. So make peace with being alone right now.
Yeah. That's a good mentality going into it, especially when you're used to fighting amongst like thousands of fans. The Apex with no fans, smaller octagon, it's got to be mindset changing.
Yeah, man. I'm a fucking entertainer, and I figured that out when I fought Gustavo. You know what I mean? I'm there to hear the boos. I'm there to hear the cheers. I'm there to hear the music. I'm there to hear the roar. I'm there to entertain people, bro. I'm not there to just collect the check. Like, I literally love fighting to entertain others.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, I'm definitely looking forward to your fight. I'm super excited for this, and I'm pulling for you. I want you to get that win, put that streak together, and get that Almeida fight.
Hell yeah, man. Thank you. I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on with us, and then good luck next week. We hope you knock him out.
Absolutely.
For sure, brother. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Yeah, take care.
Thank you very much. You have a nice rest of your day.
You too.
Thank you.
Well, what a guy that was. I really liked him. Anything that you liked from what you heard from him, Jim?
Dude, I can tell you that I want to run through a wall after hearing him speak, man. He is so inspirational. The mindset is great. I urge anybody who wants to know about just striving to be a fighter. Like, that was a perfect interview for the younger amateur fighters who want to get into this, who dream of owning a gym. Like, that was a very impactful interview from a great fighter. I'm invested, man. He has me buying in. I'm about to go buy that shirt. Like, I'm 100% invested in Anthony Bearcheck.
Yep. And then the one thing that I took from it was, like, you got to put the work in to see results. He put the work in, working 3 jobs just to help support himself while he was training, building his way up to get to the UFC. And then now he was able to have a gym, and then he fights. He's back in the UFC, so now he can reap the benefits of the hard work from early on.
Yeah.
So now he's not stressing over everything. Now he can just enjoy the process now, which is nice.
Yeah, I can tell you, I did a 3 job year before, like, to help finance my wedding, and it's not fun, man. I can only imagine, from my experience, what it's like to have 3 jobs, but then to factor in training and then fighting, and then, like, you know, it's crazy. Again, man, what a great guy. Huge fan of Anthony Bearcheck right now.
Yep. I just want to thank Anthony Bearcheck for coming on the show today. Check him out next Saturday when he fights. When he fights Gravely, he's going to be on the prelims. So check him out on there. Wish him luck. Send us any comments on the YouTube channel, and then we'll get them to him, or definitely find him on his Instagram and a page, which is right here at A Beer Check MMA. Give them a follow and then send them some good luck messages. But once again, this is Cage by IQ. You can find us on all of our social media handles right there below on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check them out. Subscribe to our YouTube page. We put out content all the time. And then even check us out when we go live on Twitch on Monday nights at 8:30 Eastern Time. And our URL is twitch.tv/cagemyIQ. So give us a follow on Twitch. Subscribe to our page. And then just enjoy all the content we put out. But I am Dan. This is my buddy Jim. And you guys have a nice rest of your day.
Take
Thanks
care.
For tuning in.
Thank you for watching this episode of Cage My IQ on the Sports Box. Please remember to follow us on all of our social media outlets. On Facebook at Sports Box Show, Twitter at Sports Box Show, Instagram at The Sports Box Show. Find us on YouTube and join Outside the Box, our Facebook sports discussion group. The Sports Box is brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And also our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and use promo code THEBOX at sign up for 10 free points. Thank you for joining us.